Hi, today's June 5th, 2022. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my friend John Westfall, and this is Mobile Views Podcast 409 for fans of the Beach Boys. That's a great song.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I had to look it up, by the way. It's apparently not a specific car. It's just sort of I guess there are a lot of Chevys back then that had 409 cubic inch engines, which is gigantic by today's standards, but.
Yeah, that's very true. But, that's the fun of the Beach Boys and trying to make sense of their music. I don't know if you ever totally make sense of it.
And you don't need to.
Yeah.
You really don't need to. Anyway, last week, I think it was last podcast, I started off by saying we obviously are not doing this podcast right. Because we're making $0 while Conan O'Brien sold his podcast empire to Sirius XM for $150 million. Further evidence, I have no idea what to do with this podcast. And there is an article in Bloomberg about some podcasters on Spotify, specifically on Spotify, which we are not, by the way, I think, who are making upwards of $18,000 a month from podcasts consisting of white noise.
I mean, if you figure it out, it's sort of like if you're the first one to figure out something, you get to really make a good deal out of it. But that does seem absolutely crazy.
There are more than one of them, by the way, and most of them are being very secretive, according to the article. But one who is not being secretive is somebody I actually know very slightly. I'm even more envious now. His name is also Todd. His name is Todd Moore. And I've never met him in person, but I have been on conference calls with him back when we were both writing for the revived Byte magazine, online version, byte.com, B-Y-T-E, for those who don't remember Byte magazine, which was only around for maybe 12 months. It was very short-lived, and apparently now the domain name got sold. It's not like a teeth whitener site. let me go to find out. I think one of my former editors. Yes, it is a get a smile you'll love to share. Byte.com. Sigh. But for those who want to read my 10-year-old articles, it is still archived on informationweek.com. So there you go. Anyway. He says he quit his cybersecurity job in 2009, to focus full-time in his app. It was an iOS. I remember he had the app when he was writing for Byte also, called White Noise. And then he launched a podcast called White Noise Sleep Sounds using Anchor, which I think you – weren't you using that for one of your podcasts?
I still do, yeah.
And it's the free podcast hosting software, and he says his White Noise show gets about 50,000 listens per day. I think all our podcasts together have about 50,000 listens. And seriously, I did look at the stats. I think it's a little over 50. He does that. That's over 12 years. Actually, 14 years for me now. Anyway, he does that in one day. A figure which would, in a 50,000 day, a figure that would rank in the top 25% of all podcasts. According to this guy who's the partner and chairman of a podcast ad agency called Ad Results Media. So, hey, Todd Moore, unlikely you're listening to podcasts, but if you are, congratulations. More power to you, my friend. Mm-hmm. And, wow, I wish I had thought of that. But, I have to say that he's been in this white noise business, and literally, his app, for literally over a decade now, right? So if he quit in 2009, he started his app before that, so his app is as old as his podcast, this Mobile Views podcast, like 14 years, so he's been at it a while, and I'm glad he's found a, another outlet for revenue, and apparently these folks, like I said, at the top of the headline is some of these podcasters are making $18,000 a month with nothing but white noise. That's not my editorial, that's Bloomberg's headline.
Well, for that much money, I'm willing to add in a couple of minutes of talking. I don't have to do completely white noise, but yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you find these little niches of what Amazing. Works and what doesn't work. It's just very crazy how smart people can sit around all day thinking about this stuff and never come up with it, and then the other people have an epiphany and make a good amount of money off of it.
Yeah, well, you know, Todd Moore actually had this epiphany twice, right? He had the good sense to create an app that created white noise on the iPhone, and it was successful enough that he was able to quit his day job, you know, 14 years ago, or 13 years ago, and then pivoted to, you know, podcasting white noise, which, I mean, I find it both humorous and fascinating. You know, it's like, he thought... Obviously, you know, Todd Moore thought, Todd Ogasawara, not so much. But, wow, that is amazing. Oh, huh. And this other person has a subscription for his podcast on Apple's podcast, like we do. Except we don't have a subscription. We're just, you know, whatever. He says he's, this other person, what's his name? Reed something. Can't find his last name. Said he's made over $10,000, not a month, but still, you know, it's $10,000 more than we have for his white noise podcast subscription. And sometimes people even tip him in addition to the subscription.
Good white noise.
Holy molies, you know, to quote Captain Marvel. I wonder, you know, I live in Hawaii, and we have a lot of interesting white noise in Hawaii. We have ocean sounds and wind sounds and even volcanic sounds. Perhaps I should go around and with a nice... sound recorder and do something like that. Maybe I'll do that in my retirement. I'll be Hawaii's white noise king.
Or just figure out how to create it in GarageBand. And
there you go.
No need to even leave home.
Well, I think the hook for me would be, you know, listen to the sounds of Hawaii from the comfort of your chair, wherever you may be.
Yeah, very true. But anyway. I could go out and take the sounds of Mississippi.
There you go. You know, and I would
really
listen
boring,
to that.
But,
but, you know, white noise, by definition, is not that interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe we should go into pink noise. You know?
Might be an untapped market.
You know,
maybe
they
we should discover other colors of noise.
Well, you know, they don't know.
A podcast.
Well, you know, there is a difference between pink and white noise, right? You know, you might remember that my major was in physiological psychology and in perception. And so the difference is that white noise is random frequencies balanced. You know, that's the noise. Pink noise, you turn down the higher frequency so you get a more lower frequency sound. So I guess it would be like the difference between, say, a ocean sound, which I would assume would be lower frequencies, with the exception of the crashes, and maybe a higher sound, which would be like wind sounds, are probably more white noise-ish, more white, you know, more balanced across frequencies. But anyway, enough of stuff I learned 40 years ago. Anyway, I'm envious and fascinated and... good luck to the folks. I hope the market is stable for you, and you keep making money, and you can retire from your day job like my very, very light acquaintance Todd Moore did.
Yep, very true.
Okay, I've got kind of a rant, maybe not a rant, but just an observation. So, I picked up a pretty nice keyboard from Artek, A-R-T-E-C-K. Which I think uses the same OEM as Anker for their keyboards. And I can't find Anker keyboards anymore on Amazon, by the way, for whatever reason. You can find everything else on Anker, but not the keyboards. So I've been buying some... I've bought maybe 3 Arctek keyboard, Bluetooth keyboards now. This one, though, this one is different because it has a touchpad on it. And which works with the iPad, you know, amongst other things and anything else. But it has a touchpad on it and a really nice... not too clicky keyboard, but, you know, nice travel. It's not a dead keyboard. So I bought it. I turned it on. I paired it. And right away, I got a message I got with an earlier keyboard, which says it's a very generic name. So it's identifies as Bluetooth 5.1 keyboard. So it says using, quote, Bluetooth 5.1 keyboard, unquote, may affect Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. And the thing is, I got the very same error message with the only other Bluetooth keyboard I have that also has a touchpad, which I don't like because it's too flimsy. But I thought, you know, when I first saw that message on the first keyboard, I thought, well, you know, maybe it's a no-name keyboard and it's got, you know, kind of dicey engineering. And now with a giant sample size of 2 versus 1, yep. I'm getting the exact same message, except, you know, a different keyboard name. The other one says, I think, Bluetooth keyboard 3.1 or something. But I, so far, it doesn't actually seem to cause a problem. Wi-Fi seems to work fine when I'm using it. Bluetooth, at least the keyboard works fine. I haven't tested Bluetooth with my AirPods and a keyboard at the same time, but I guess I can test that after this podcast. It's very curious. I would guess that the Apple's, you know, $400 Magic Keyboard with touchpad doesn't produce this error, but I wonder if it's, you know, non-Apple products with a touchpad all that. Oh, I have one more. You know, I just lied. I have a third keyboard that has a touchpad on it. I should try that in my iPad Pro.
Well, the related annoyance that I wonder about, maybe this is all related, is
yeah.
It seems like certain Bluetooth devices and peripherals seem to do this more than others. Keyboards and mice, if they aren't expensive, they yeah. seem to require multiple repairing, and so you end up with 3 or 4 of them in your list, and you don't know which one, you know, until you delete them all out and start adding repair them again. I hate a very cluttered Bluetooth list, but it seems like I always have one. But
yeah, me too.
What makes it even worse is when there's multiple of the exact same device sitting there because the first pairing seems to be forgotten, and then you have to repair and. I don't know why Bluetooth is as finicky as it is now as it's been forever. You would think we have figured this out long ago.
Yeah, you might remember that our fellow former MVP Ed Hansberry mm-hmm. hated Bluetooth with a passion. this was on a Windows Mobile device, but you know, still he really hated. You know, I wish Apple kept a count of how many Bluetooth devices you have, because I'm looking at the list and it's on my iPhone, and it's well over a dozen. It's shocking and disgusting how many Bluetooth devices I have, actually. Wow. I didn't realize I had paired that many things with it. But there you go. At any rate, I'll post a photo of my new keyboard alongside with a comparison photo of my older ARC-EC keyboard, which does not have a touchpad and works great. I use that one all the time with one of my other iPad Pros. And I, you know, this leads us to the next topic. So WWDC starts tomorrow, June 6th.
Yep.
And one of the only things that interests me about it this year is iPad OS 16, because there's rumors that it's really going to be more MacBook-like or notebook-like in its features than we have right now. And I wonder, you know, if it's going to make better use of keyboard. I mean, actually, iPad already makes pretty darn good use of keyboards, in my opinion, including support mm-hmm. for mouse, including support for, you know, the touchpad I just bought. So it's not bad. I am kind of worried that they might pull a Microsoft on us and make it only available for M1 devices, which I do not have, at least in the iPad.
Yeah, I wonder about that, too. It's going to be interesting to see, because the M1 devices and the iPad have not been out that long. It's only been a year that the M1 devices have been out. So for them to nerf some of these features for devices that are just 2 years old seems a little bit strange for Apple. So we'll have to see. On the whole, I was not very thrilled with the amount of rumors out for iPad OS. The iPad OS rumors are just really thin. Same as Mac OS. Those rumors are very thin right now. Really, the rumors that I have noticed you've got a good amount on are the iOS, you know, the iPhone room, which we can talk about. So I think right now I am not willing to make any real predictions about iPad OS or, new hardware. I think new hardware, I'd be very shocked to see compelling new hardware announced tomorrow. But they have been adding hardware to WWDC over the last few years.
They tend to be the pro devices, though.
Yeah. And it wasn't as much a hardware announcement platform for them for so many years, but it's starting to get to the point where you don't know what you're going to see at a developers conference in terms of software and hardware.
Yeah, and there is the other thing that I find somewhat interesting, although I don't think I will buy one, is there are rumors that they're going to talk about but not release as some kind of augmented or virtual reality headset. And, you know, I haven't bought an Oculus. I don't know if you bought one, John. I've not bought an Oculus of any kind. Rift 2, whatever is out now, 3. I have several friends who have. They seem pretty happy with it. But I just don't have a use case for a several hundred. You know, same reason I don't have a AirPods Max headset. You know, it's I have limited use for a multi-hundred dollar device. That, you know, I'm not going to like the Apple Watch, which I had debates about early on, but I you know, really enjoy now. That's multi-hundred dollar too, but it's something I literally use every day and, you know, literally all the time. So, I don't know. What about, you excited about an AR, VR kind of headset and looking not even more geeky than we already do?
Not unless they can do something really cool with it. And honestly, I want it to be a AR device that could go VR if you wanted it to, but it would be built into glasses. That would, you know, be compelling for me. But I still have not jumped on AR VR, and I don't know what's going to be the compelling thing. I think you're right. It has to be something I'd want to use every day. Sort of like my AirPods Pro, and my AirPods didn't get very useful until I started carrying them every single day with me. I took them out of my bag and put them in my pocket or put them on my belt. All of a sudden, they became a lot more compelling to use regularly. But even them, I was looking at my AirPods Pro this morning, thinking about what features I would need to upgrade those. And it would have to be health tracking features or you know, a few other features. But really, they're doing a fine job with first-gen AirPod Pro at this point. I don't see any compelling reason to upgrade those if it's just a incremental upgrade.
Yep, and I'm wearing my AirPods Pro right now to do this podcast with you. So that's one of my use cases. But, you know, the only use case I have for a VR headset, not necessarily AR, the AR would be okay, is watching movies. You know, having a literal giant screen without having to sit up like a human being.
Yeah, that's true.
That
would be nice.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful that, and like you, for the AirPod side, the compelling feature for me is, if like you said, if they added more health monitoring features, for me specifically temperature, I think that would be really interesting. So that you would have a baseline, not just a baseline, but a baseline throughout the day. I assume our body temperature goes up and down slightly, you know, not to a fever point, but goes up and down throughout the day. And it'd be kind of interesting to, you know, get a log of that. So you have a more individualized understanding of your health. Okay, AR VR, it's gonna be $1,000 or more is my guess. And it's gonna be huge, so you know, it's not gonna be even like a Geordi LaForge headset on Star Trek Next Generation. That size I could tolerate, although as you remember, Lieutenant Commander LaForge had implants to use that, and I don't want implants to have to use a headset.
Yeah, that's true too.
All right. So you said you're more interested in the iPhone rumors. What do you, what's interesting you in there? I really didn't look at the iPhone side.
So I went through a Mac Rumors article where they did a very nice roundup. And so here are my thoughts on it. One of the rumors is that there's going to be an overhauled lock screen with wallpapers that have widget-like capabilities. Widgets are nice, but they better be more interactive than the ones I have now. Most of the widgets I have now, when they do refresh information, and when I tap on them, they go to an app. But I would like controls in widgets. So, for example, a slider control in a focus widget to turn on that focus. So I don't have to pull down and go into that, or I don't have to tap on it and go into it. I have a widget right now that runs a shortcut, which is sort of exactly the behavior I'd like from stock widgets. So, for example, swipe on a weather widget to switch from temperature to precipitation chance
or
something like that without having to open up a new app. That would be nice. A significant improvement to notifications is another rumored new feature. I would just like some parity with notification features. So, for example, messages is the only notification that you can set to repeat. it's been like that forever. You can go into the notifications for messages and tell it, hey, if I get a new message, repeat it 2 times in case I'm away from my device and don't notice it. Can't do that with any other notification type. Don't know why. Should be something that you could apply to every notification. Hmm. Also, in focus modes, driving focus is the only one that can auto-respond. I would like all the focus modes to be able to auto-respond. You know, I'm at work right now. I will get back to you later. Mm-hmm. I'd like those auto-responds to be able to go with just my favorite individuals or all individuals. There's another rumor that Apple is looking at social network-like functionality in messages. Okay, whatever. Expanded health tracking with medicine management. Okay,
that'd
I guess
be cool.
That's nice. Yeah, depending on what you do with it. I don't take a lot of medicine, thankfully. So, but it would be kind of nice to decide on like the few times a year I do take over-the-counter pain medication,
yeah. Or even vitamins and stuff. You know, to remind you,
yeah,
did
I
take it?
That,
in, you know.
Yeah. Also, there is apparently quote new ways of system interaction. That would be interesting if it's my argument is it's either going to be revolutionary, it's going to be really cool, or it's going to be a flash in the pan. And that's sort of how these go with Apple. For example, assistive touch on Apple Watch was a feature I was very much looking forward to last year. It is useful, but unless I absolutely had to use it, it's not practical to use on a daily basis. Yes, one-handed with just wrist flicks and finger taps and all that is kind of nice, but I don't turn it on because I don't. It's quicker for me to do two-handed, even if my hands
Agree.
Are full.
Yeah. Plus, the gestures sometimes trigger when you don't want them to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Makes you wonder what it'd be like to be an actual magician. Not, you know, like a stage, but like actual magic, and every gesture does something. I mean, would you like, you know, if you scratch your eye, would you, you know, send a lightning bolt through your head?
It's a legitimate concern. And then the iPhone 14 rumor, the big one that we keep seeing is that there might be an always-on display for the iPhone 14 Pro and Pro Max. I totally get always wanting an always-on display for your Apple Watch, where you're going to catch it out of the corner of your eye and be able to see the time and that sort of thing. But most of the time when I have my phone out, I don't want the screen on unless something comes in. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's a feature that once I had it, I would say, this is great. Why did I ever have a device that didn't have it? But I don't quite get it for a phone or a tablet.
I think I can address their logic behind that one. Okay, and I want to talk about a widget thing too, but the always on screen. So I have an Android phone in addition to an iPhone. I have an old phone too. It's a Pixel 4a, so it's a couple years old. And it has an always-on screen, except when you actually put it to sleep with a magnetic, you know, switch. So it's always-on screen is limited to, let me see if John can see it. Probably not. No, can't see it. It's limited to the time of day, the day and date, a little tiny weather widget that shows you whether it's sunny or cloudy, and the current temperature. And then a couple of icons saying you have notifications for a couple of things. And it's on a black screen. So it's not taking up a lot of energy or using up a lot of energy. And it shows me that I have a weather notice and two news items if I unlock the screen. And sure enough, when I unlock the screen, I can see it's giving me today's forecast. And it has two weather items just as the screen notice. So I can kind of see that they're kind of playing catch up to Android for people who criticize them for not having a feature on Android. Doesn't seem to use up a lot of power. My Android device usually has a lot of power at the end of the day. And I use it a lot these days because, as I've said many times, after Google changed Google Photos from unlimited storage for all devices to only a few select Pixel devices, I started using my Pixel 4a for photos. Because it was one of the few devices that still has unlimited photo upload. And, it's kind of nice to have. Getting back to widgets, though, so phones have such small screens that, and the widgets on on Android device works kind of the same. So there's a, if you swipe to the swipe right, I guess it shows a Google Assistant full page view of news and weather and other kinds of stuff. But on the homepage itself, you know, with the icons to launch, you have the option of adding live widgets. I only have two because of limited space. One is calendar, which I can scroll up and down to see my calendar of events, and I can tap to select. And I also have a photo widget that kind of shows me a photo of the moment. I'm not sure how often it changes. But that's it. There's just not enough screen space on a relatively small phone screen. So I'm not sure exactly how Apple proposes to implement widgets on the screen. Do you use widgets on your iPad home screen, which has more space?
I do use them, and I enjoy using them. I just would like them to be a little more interactive, in a sense.
Yeah. So, you know, and I refresh my memory because I can't remember. It's been so long. Did Windows Phone home screen widgets, were they... I remember they changed, like they had weather and stuff, but were they maneuverable? Did they do stuff? Did they react to gestures? I don't remember.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember them being anything more than just what Apple widgets do now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to remember. It's been so long. The old tile interface, which so many of our friends really enjoyed. I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was enough to keep using it after, you know, they removed compatibility with all the apps I used. Yeah, so it's always on. I can kind of defend it if they implement it like they do on Android phones. The widget thing, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, I got to say, you know, so I don't know when the concept of widgets first emerged, but I remember being excited with, what was it? Was it Windows 98 SE or Windows Millennium? You know, back in the last millennium, it actually had active widgets on the screen. I thought, oh, this would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was 98. It was 98 either first or SE, and it was Active Desktop. And Active Desktop, mostly people remember it for how often it crashed.
I was going to say that. The widgets mostly crashed.
Yeah, that was how. That was the most thing that you. I think we all remember the most. Because it was a feature of Internet Explorer 4.0 that allowed you to have HTML on your desktop. It was included in Windows 98. And it was an idea that was a pretty cool idea.
It was a cool idea.
But just wasn't very stable.
It wasn't stable. And weren't they also ActiveX based, which meant they were probably like a giant security hole?
Well, yeah, that we didn't really know of at the time. But yes, I mean, Internet Explorer 4.0 was kind of a giant security hole.
True.
So it took until 6, and then 6 became a giant security hole as it got older. Security was not all that important.
No, it wasn't.
Microsoft at that time. It was more enable interactivity, which was cool. But yeah, now we look at it and go, man, you could drive a truck through that.
Yeah,
you know, you live and learn. So yeah, that is my thoughts on iOS. So a few other things that we've heard about. You know, macOS doesn't have too much that's being announced or that we know of. One of the things that I'm on right now. So I've had this back and forth with stock apps. Right now I'm on the stock apps for mail, calendar, and contacts. I'm hoping we get some cool stuff on that on macOS and iOS. But I might, if I don't see anything, I might go back to Outlook. And I do have a wish list item that speaks to something cool that would be nice to see. And for watchOS, some of the rumors, you know, kind of the same evolutionary stuff. Here's what I want from Apple for watchOS. I'm never going to get custom watch faces. I've given up on that. I've asked them. I've wanted that for the last 5 years. Here's what I would like. Give me a watch face that is a grid of complications, either a 2x2 or a 3x3, and let me choose where to put the actual time. So if I want to do 9 complications or 4 complications in square or maybe 2x1 or whatever, let me have that option and I can squeeze the time into one of those 9 squares or I can put it over 5 of the 9 squares or whatever it might be. But just give me that level of flexibility. We can still keep everything in complications A lot of great complications are out there now, but, you know, just let me decide how big I want my watch to show the time and where it's at, and I'll be happy with that.
So basically you want the old Google watch.
Yeah.
Which also had custom faces.
I'm trying to come up with a compromise here, but they're not anywhere I needed to be.
Yeah. Well, as long as the watch isn't round, because as you pointed out a couple of podcasts ago, you know, round watches have aesthetic appeal, but they're not very practical in a digital world.
Yeah. So. Yeah. When the world is square, that's round right. is not as good as we think it's going to
yeah.
be.
Yeah. Yeah. Round is not the new square.
Yeah. So a couple other things on my wish list. This is my WWDC wish list.
Yep.
So that watch face idea would be great.
I think that's great.
Auto respond in all focus groups would be nice. Focus auto respond to just favorites or all users, people who text me. This is going to be two things that are really stretches. More ways for my iPhone to respond for me or on my behalf to things.
Hmm.
So smart auto responses in mail would be nice. You know, someone, basically I get an email that says, hey, it's really urgent. Can you look at this? Or as soon as possible, can you do that? And my phone could just write back, John is in a meeting until 3 o'clock this afternoon. And, you know, we'll be able to get to your mail at that point.
Hmm.
That seems like that would be a really nice, proactive way of handling those things.
By the way, Gmail does that.
Yeah. Doing it through text or doing it through any other messaging platform or even just having smart auto or smart replies or quick replies.
Right.
You know, my watch would be able to prompt and say, hey, you just got this text. Do you want to write back? I'm in a meeting until 4:00 or I can call you later, etc. Whatever. Also, along those lines, proactive Siri. So Siri is reactive right now. You have to trigger Siri like much every other voice. You know, assistant. I don't mind if during certain times of the day or certain focus groups, Siri interrupts me and says, hey, you just got this piece of information, or let me tell you what's going on outside right now, weather-wise. You know, it's going to start raining in 10 minutes. I might get that pop-up on my watch. I might not look at it if I'm busy. But if Siri were to ding and say, hey, letting you know it's going to rain in 10 minutes, that might get my attention. Now, obviously, I would want to be able to control when Siri is making these, like, you know, butt-in comments. You know, don't do it when I'm in my work focus, or do it when I'm only in, you know, at home or in these geofenced locations. But that seems like that would take Siri from being rather on the dumb side to being on the more useful side. And then the last two things are just... this one's really obscure. In Apple Mail, you can do random signature lines. I'd like to always have one signature line and then choose from a pool of random lines. That would be kind of nice. And
like a saying of the day or something?
Saying of the day or a random, you know, quote.
Yeah.
And then more graceful handling of file attachment returning in mail. I often get a workflow where someone will send me something and say, hey, take a look at this attachment, because not all of my colleagues are on this whole SharePoint idea or cloud idea. So it'll be, hey, look at this file attachment and send back your edits. That should be one fluid motion where I open the attachment, I make some edits, and then Apple Mail goes, okay, do you want to attach this new version to a reply to that email that you just got?
Or Outlook, for that matter.
Yeah, you get that a little bit with marking up a PDF. Apple will ask if you want to send back the markup copy, but I'd like that for all attachments.
Right. I just want people to stop using email attachments or email, at least at work.
Yeah, that'd be good.
You know, like you said, not everybody's gotten the message that, hey, you know, collaboration has changed since 1992. And, you know. Just put it in a chat message to me, and I can edit it. I can not only edit it, you can see while I'm editing, if you want.
Yeah, I know. Revolutionary thought.
Yeah.
So that's my WWDC stuff. I guess we will see. We'll see next weekend what we see from WWDC.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I know Apple's announcements are hardware announcements are always on Tuesday, but WWDC starts on a Monday. Do you think announcements will be held off till Tuesday?
No, they're usually always on Monday. Keynote, which will be at 10 a.m. tomorrow Pacific time, which I will be watching. I thankfully am able to block off my schedule this year to actually watch it.
Yeah.
Some years I can, some years I can't. It will be then, and we will see. Usually it's pretty boring for the first half hour. Then it gets more interesting.
I usually watch the 10-minute recap that people do, where they cut out all the fluff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I should start my Hawaii White Noise podcast today.
Yeah, and I have my last little bit here is the joys of China air freight.
Uh-oh.
Back in April, I saw an ad on Facebook or wherever for a suitcase that was really awesome looking and really well priced, as many of these things are. $29, and I thought, okay, I'll take a gamble on it for $29.
Sure.
I knew shipping was going to be a while. I did not think it was going to be order on April 16th, shipped on May 1st, no update from May 12th until June 4th, and now apparently it's in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And so I'm hoping I might get it before I go travel in a few weeks. But talk about the joys of how long it can take to get something freighted over here.
Well, especially from China, with the whole pandemic thing and whole city's been locked down. There's a lot of supply chain stuff going on. So not surprising. May I ask what was so special about this aside from the wonderful price?
So, the wonderful price is definitely it. I do have a link in the show notes to it. It is a hard-sided rolling piece of luggage, which I have wanted to get another one of those. But what it has is a door on the front to be able to get access to some of your things so that you don't have to open up the whole case. Because that's one of my biggest complaints with rolling bags is that if I need to get into them, I need to set it down, open it up. This actually allows you to get in. And it's got a few other random
rolls. It's got a cup holder.
It's got a cup holder. USB charging port. So there are a few things to it. If it is half as good as it says it is, I think it's worth the $29.99 price.
Yeah. So. And it comes with a free cosmetic luggage accessory thing.
We'll see how that goes. And I get this, I'm happy to give my review.
Yeah. If people want to know. Normal price is $100. So the $30 price is definitely a deal.
That's what they tell you, that the normal price is $99.99. And it comes in small, medium, and large, a 20, a 24, and a 28. I got the 20. If I like it, maybe I'll get the 24 or 28 and wait a year for it.
And a pull handle doubles as an iPad stand.
Yeah.
What?
Now you're thinking maybe I'll take a gamble for $30. I mean, it's always such a funny thing to me how we look at this stuff and go, I know this is probably not great, but I'll give it a shot.
For $30, right? I mean.
Yeah. That was literally what I thought on April 16th.
It's less than a pair of inexpensive Bluetooth headphones. Or I think I paid $30 for my new keyboard. So. Oh, boy. Okay. Actually, I think my daughter might like this. I'm going to send her a link. But tell her, hey, you got to wait like 3 months for it or something. So.
I mean, it comes in white, black, red, blue, or pink.
There you go. So. You got your choices. Unlike MacBooks.
I mean, the thing that's ludicrous about it, I think, is the cup holder on the back, which actually is not a bad idea, but it's just funny.
I'm not going to ever travel again because I've just given up on the concept. But back when I did travel, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
And it is a fully locked-in cup holder. So it has a cup in it, but you could also put a water bottle in as you're, dragging it through wherever you're going to your hotel It won't, won't fall out or anything. I love this. If I were traveling a lot, I would just order it right now, but.
It's interesting to see. I'll be curious to see if it lives up to expectations or not. I will update our audience when and if it arrives.
Yeah. By the way, our friend Craig Peacock, who we had on as a guest panelists last year, I guess. When I first met Craig, and by met, I mean in person, we knew each other via email and stuff, because, you know, we were both Windows CE fans back in the 90s, and we said, hey, you know, are you going to Comdex? And he was in England at the time, and you know, where he was born and raised. He's in the U.S. now, but he said, hey, we said, yeah, I'm going to Comdex too. He says, let's meet up, because like, how are you recognizing? I said, well, I'll wear an Aloha shirt, although it'll be cold, so I might have a jacket on. And he said, I will have a hideous orange bag. And he said, it's not that I like orange, although he later went to work for Orange, the company. It's not that I like the color orange. It's just that it's easy for people to spot when I tell them how to recognize me if they've never met me. So this does not have orange, but it does have a bright red option. So there you go. And the red's quite nice. It's not hideous at all. All right. Okay. MobileViews Podcast 409, It's So Fine, has come to an end. Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm.